All right.
Okay. All right. Well, let me open us with prayer. Dear Lord, I want to thank you for these ladies that are really dedicated and doing their Bible study every Wednesday night. It's just wonderful to be with them and to understand how much they love your word and like digging in and learning. And Lord, thank you also for this beautiful day and the sunshine that we had and the warm weather, and it'll give us courage to face the few cold days that we've got ahead. And I just am grateful for everyone who paused what they were doing this evening to get together. And I invite the Holy Spirit to be with us as we dig into your word. Amen.
Amen.
And a couple of new folks, Carla Whitcomb, says Paul, but it's Carla, is from my Sunday school class, and she works on Mondays in the bookstore. Hey, Carla. So I told her about this class, so she joined. And then Melinda Blackman has signed up for the Monday class, but she's with us tonight, too. So good to see everyone.
Hey, Ruth Whitefield sent me an email today and said she would not be in here tonight, just so you know, or she would join really late. So I just wanted you to know.
Great. And Elizabeth's with us. Hey, Elizabeth.
Hey.
That's my buddy now right there.
Very dedicated Bible scholar.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
I didn't know about that.
Hey. All right. Let's plunge in, everybody. So we're going to finish up with the last Gentile nation tonight, and then we're going to see the oracle against Judah, the southern kingdom, and then we're finally going to get into the whole point of this book, which is all the sins of the northern kingdom. So what was the nation that was referenced in Amos 2, 1 through 3, and how did it relate to Israel by blood?
It was Moab, and it Lot's, let's see, which daughter was it? That was the older daughter that had had a son by him because, you know, they got dad drunk. And so, yep, her son's name was Moab.
Okay, great. And lots of examples in the Old Testament about the relationship with Moab and the Israelites. But I just picked one from Judges 3, 12 through 14. So what'd you learn from that example?
Sorry, I was muted. Israel had done what was evil. They were in captivity for 18 years.
Yeah. Kind of hard to believe that that happened. You know, we kind of, if you haven't studied the book of Judges, there's just sort of a recurring theme, kind of like 1st and 2nd Kings, about they did evil in the sight of the Lord. But the fact that they were ruled by the Moabites for 18 years is pretty significant. All right, so what did this nation do that was so bad? And what's your opinion about this sin?
I didn't quite understand. It said they didn't bury people. They just threw them in a ditch. Oops, I don't. They didn't.
And burned the bones.
Burned the bones.
Burned the bones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Burned to lime, whatever that means.
Yeah, well. I'm going to talk about the underlying Hebrew when we get to the lecture. But, you know, just on the surface in your immediate reaction, why do you think this was so bad?
What I found in one of the study notes was that such burning indicated a special contempt and was thought to deprive the dead of the peace in the afterlife.
Yes, yes. You know, think about the Egyptians and their reverence for the body and their burial techniques. And so that was quite common in the Middle East. So not having a proper burial is a big deal. Good, good. All right, so Isaiah talked about Moab. What did he say in Isaiah 16?
Said that within 3 years, as a servant bound by contract would count them, Moab's splendor and all her many people will be despised, and her survivors will be very few and feeble. They'll basically be gone, eradicated.
Yeah. Not wiped off the face of the map, though. We're going to talk about that in a little bit in the lecture. All right, so, you know, and I put this at the beginning of the lesson that, you know, the Israelites and probably the Judahites were going, oh, great, now all our neighbors that have held us in contempt all this time are finally going to get what's coming to them. Of course, they don't know they're about to be smacked down themselves as well. But we got to fast forward to our time. And what did Paul say about how we should feel about another group getting punished or an individual getting punished? We're on question 5.
Yeah, we shouldn't rejoice over them, that's for sure. We shouldn't be, you know, like, oh, you got what you deserved. We shouldn't. My put, because it's only by the grace of God that I'm not being punished for my sin and that I'm just as capable of committing whatever sin they are. And it's only by God's grace that I'm not.
Don't repay evil for evil and don't take revenge, but leave room for God's wrath.
Yeah. Justice belongs to God, belongs to the Lord. And we know from the book of Revelation that God is going to vest that judgment in Jesus Christ. So he's going to carry it out. Good. All right. So moving on to Amos 2, verses 4 through 5. So we've been sitting here fat, dumb, and happy, and all of a sudden, boom, I'm going to lower the boom on Judah. So there were three sins listed in verses 4 through 5. What were the three sins that Judah had done?
Well, they rejected the law of the Lord. They have not kept God's decrees. They have not followed his, you know, his law. And they have turned to false gods.
Right. Good. So why do you think these sins would be so objectionable in God's eye? And I gave you Romans 2, 17 through 29 just for some context. So what was your opinion about those three sins? Maybe somebody who hasn't answered a question.
I put head down, you were feeling smug because of your beliefs, thinking yourself as an insider and that you had it all together. Preaching on one thing and doing the opposite.
Okay, good. Anybody else?
God is blasphemed among the Gentiles.
Sorry, Melinda, could you say that again?
The name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles.
Yeah. Good. Carla, did you want to add something? You're muted somehow.
She's not muted, but her microphone's not picking up when she speaks.
Yeah. Check which mic you're using, maybe.
I was going to say that, you know, the greatest command is to love the Lord with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so they really have broken the greatest command by turning away from him.
Good. Good. Yep. You know, Paul said breaking God's law dishonors God.
Mm-hmm.
And they were given God's law. They weren't, it wasn't, you know, nobody else was given his law. It was the Israelites.
Good. All right. So I gave you some other references that talk a little bit more about Judah's sins. So what did you learn from 2 Kings 16?
Well, I didn't write down which was which, but they had child sacrifice, sex shrines, worship of the gods.
Okay, good. Yep. So 2 Kings 16 was the child sacrifices and then making offerings on the high places, on the hills, and under every green tree. So not in the temple at all. All right, how about 2 Kings 17?
I think this is it. They did not follow the law as presented by Moses. They followed idols, worshiped Baal and Asherah, sacrifice. Well, I don't know whether that's them or the next one. Sacrificed sons and daughters in fire, practiced sorcery.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Good. Good. Yeah, we don't think about the kings of Judah sacrificing their children to Moloch, who was, you know, the god that basically it was a statue and fire came up and he had outstretched arms and they would lay the child there and let him burn to death. Hezekiah's father, and his father was king, did that with Hezekiah's brother. Pretty awful story. All right, so how about Ezekiel?
I put down desecrated the Lord's Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
Ezekiel.
Yep. And did idol worship again. Mm-hmm. And then Isaiah 66, 3 through 4, you really needed to have your footnotes to answer this one. Anyone take a stab at it?
Go ahead.
I may have gotten a footnote. Chosen their own place and sold the light in their abominations.
Okay, it got garbled, Pat.
It did get garbled too. They've chosen their own ways and their soul delights in their abominations. And they were all something about sacrifices.
Yeah. They stopped following the sacrificial laws. So they didn't sacrifice the ritual ox properly. They used dogs in ritual offerings. They used pig's blood in offerings, and they presented frankincense as an offering like you would to an idol. So they had totally thrown away the Levitical law, according to Isaiah.
What was interesting is they said that they delighted in what they were doing. You know, that word delight.
Their soul delight.
Well, I would hate to think that I ever got to a point in my life where I delighted in my sin, you know, that'd be pretty far gone.
Yeah. So this sort of adds some context to just those few verses that we get from Amos where he's talking about how you've abandoned God's law.
Mm.
This is what Amos was talking about. He doesn't expound on that because he is a prophet to the Northern Kingdom. And sad to say, the Northern Kingdom had done even worse than the Southern Kingdom. And we've seen some pretty awful examples so far. Good job. All right. So I gave you Leviticus 26, 14 through 39 about the consequences for God's people if they ignore his laws. And boy, that just went on for paragraphs. What are a few things that you wrote down? Maybe somebody who hasn't answered.
What I wrote, I'll go ahead. Body ailments, crops not yielding enough, Lord taking his protection from them, making them vulnerable to their enemies.
Yep.
That's what I wrote.
Good. Anybody else?
I thought it was interesting that he kept repeating that he would strike down, or he was about their sins, and it was sevenfold every time, sevenfold, sevenfold.
Yeah, it's just going to get progressively worse.
Yeah.
And you read a progression there, right? You know, you start out with the crops, and then you get pestilence, and then you get to the point where you're starving, and there's cannibalism, and then it ends with exile, if you picked up on that.
Yeah, devastation, yeah.
And so that's what's going to happen in the Northern Kingdom first, and that's what's going to happen to the Southern Kingdom. So everything God said in Leviticus is going to happen to these two kingdoms, every single thing, because they've fallen away from God. So I kind of keep this one earmarked because it ties back so well to what's going on with these two nations.
Mm.
All right, so we see in 2 Kings 25, 1 through 9, that the events that Amos prophesied about Judah are going to take place. They are going to happen. So whom did God use to bring about the events?
Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah. Good. And what did he do?
He besieged the city. There was famine.
I think it was interesting. He laid siege to the city for 2 years. Yeah. Can you imagine being inside that city and having to, you know, hoping they're going away, but then after 2 years, you know, you're out of food, you got to come out.
Yeah, that's right. Pretty intense circumstances. Then he captures the king and all of his sons. He kills all of his sons before his eyes, and then they put the king's eyes out and haul him off to Babylon. Pretty brutal.
And they burned all the houses.
Then they burned down
all the houses, the kings, the temples. Right. Yes.
Destroy the city. Mm-hmm. All right. Done with Judah for a while. All right. Let's turn to our Israelite buddies. All right. So they're feeling pretty good. And now Amos is going to light into them. All right. So moving on to verses 6 through 7a, what was the sin in those verses and how did it violate God's statutes?
Well, I wrote down they bought and sold people, they oppressed the poor, they slept with prostitutes.
Yep. Specifically from Leviticus, what was the ruling about the Israelites in slavery?
Was that the one where they must never be sold as slaves?
Yes. All right. Ding, ding, ding. So here, yes. You know, everybody that heard what Amos said, if they knew God's law, would be thinking, oh, we violated that passage in Leviticus. All right. And you also should have seen that it was okay for other nations to be slaves, but not Israelites. All right, what did Deuteronomy say about the poor?
If you see someone in need, don't look the other way.
Right.
Share with him.
Yes. So don't mistreat them. Okay. So Micah also, like Amos, really was a champion of the poor. So what did he say about the oppressed?
To do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God.
Yeah. That's what the Lord requires. Okay. So we've got a sin, and I can't remember whether Jane or Barbara mentioned it, but in Amos 2C, and how did it violate God's laws, and what were the possible penalties?
Oh, ooh, this one was terrible.
Okay.
The father and son have sexual relations with the same girl, which I found out in another translation or something that the girl was a virgin, and that, and this profanes the God's holy name. You want me to go on? In Deuteronomy, if a man rapes an unmarried virgin, he must marry her and pay the father 50 shekels of silver, and he can never divorce her. Yay! Leviticus says if a man sleeps with his father's wife, he and the wife will be put to death.
Right, yeah.
And Ezekiel says, defiled Lord's name by the evil ways, did not, this is, why? How would it profane? It defiled his name by the evil that they did not follow the decrees, the statutes of God, and therefore should something, showed no love for God.
Yes. Yes.
Can't read my writing.
Good. So we don't know who the woman is. We don't know what, you know, what she is in relation to the family. But depending on that situation, her, if she's a virgin or not, or if she's like married to the father or married to the son, you could get into a heap of trouble and violate multiple laws there. Okay. All right. Amos 2:8a says, they lay themselves down beside every altar on garments taken in pledge. That's a sin. So how did that violate God's law?
Okay, they lounged in the clothing of the debtors that the debtors put up as security. Is that right?
That's what they did. That's the sin. Yeah.
That's the sin. And where did I read? Well, you must return it. Oh, and they were supposed to return the cloak or the piece of clothing by sunset of the same day.
Right.
Which they did not do.
Yeah.
They broke their pledge.
They broke their pledge. Yeah, you're not, you know, that's his only covering, right? You're not supposed to take his cloak.
Yeah.
Take something else. All right, 8b says, in the house of their God, they drink the wine of those who have been fined. So what does this tell you about the Israelite worship practices and where they were worshiping?
They were worshiping at Dan, Bethel, and Gilgal. Mm-hmm. Gilgal. And they would drink the wine that, they bought, drink wine that was the wine bought with unjust fines in the house of God, as well as other, and there were other altars that they did the same thing, profaning God's name by doing so. Sexual promiscuity and drunkenness, using the clothing and the funds taken from debtors.
These people were here. Bad. The ESV actually has God capitalized,
Yes,
NIV.
Yes, and the, so does the ASV, had it capitalized, but the New King James Version does not.
Right.
There was two and two. I looked at four different things to see, and
so, that's what I think Jane said it very well. So they weren't worshiping in the temple at all, right? And hadn't been for many, many, many years, like over 150 years. So, you know, the house of their God, not really the Lord, right?
Right.
Idol worship. Okay, good. All right. Now, so Amos has laid out some sins, a few. We're going to get a lot more as we go along. So now he just kind of chastises them in verses 9 through 11. What are all the things that God has done for the Israelites in its history?
What has he done for the Israelites?
Mm-hmm. According to the verses 9 through 11.
He destroyed the Amorites.
Oh, okay.
He brought them out of Egypt. He led them in the wilderness to possess the land of the Amorites. And he raised up sons as prophets and some sons as Nazarites.
Great. Good. Good summary. All right. So what did they do to the Nazarites, and what was wrong with that?
They made them drink wine.
Okay.
That was against their, if they were separated, in that separation, they weren't supposed to have anything to do with the grapevine, grape, or any other part of it.
Right.
I mean, it went on and on, the seeds, the skins, the anything.
Yeah. So it makes you wonder how they made it, forced them to drink wine. So
I know, if they knew. I thought that,
yeah,
too.
Good.
Because Samson was a Nazarite, wasn't he?
He was.
Yes.
He was. Yep. All right, 12b, command of the prophet saying, you shall not prophesy. And I gave you a reference in Amos 7, 12 through 13. That's exactly what's going to happen to Amos. So we'll read that when we get to chapter 7. And then people said the same thing to Jeremiah. You know, you're not welcome here. We don't want to hear what you have to say. Quit speaking the word of the Lord. All right, so starting with verse 13, God's going to describe what's going to happen to Israel. So what's the image in verse 13?
It's about a cart that's loaded down with grain, and this would crush whoever got under it. And that's how he was going to crush Israel.
Good. All right. So in 14 through 16, Amos is talking about the Israelite army, which was a big point of pride, and particularly with Jeroboam II, because he had a large standing army that was quite effective. So how is this army going to stand up against battle?
They are.
They're not.
No matter what they do, they can't run fast enough. Their strength won't be enough. The fighters won't be enough. The archers won't be enough. Nothing will be enough.
Yeah, good.
I loved it when it said the bravest warriors will flee naked.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But then I read someplace where that means they drop their weapons and flee.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's funnier when he makes them flee naked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now this, the ESV, the Reformation Bible, the ESV says even the bravest of warriors, the army will fail recklessly. Like, even the bravest warriors cast away not only their armor and weapons, but also every impediment, including clothing, in the panic of useless flight, such that naked flight is an utter humiliation.
Okay.
It sounds like they were down to the buff.
Yeah, trying to, you know, escape. And also, you know, we let's think about this in modern terms. So, and this happened a lot in World War II, and I'm sure it's happened in other wars. You know, people from the opposing army would recognize you by what you had on, right?
Ah, yeah.
So if you don't want to get captured, you know, throw away anything that's going to identify you as a member of the army. Definitely throw your weapons away and, you know, get rid of any insignia, all that kind of stuff. So, all right.
Now it makes sense.
So why would this be so demoralizing?
Would it be because they knew God wasn't with them?
That's a good answer. Anybody else?
If your army runs, you don't stand a chance against not being defeated or taken over.
Yeah, and I suppose the nation becomes a slave to the army that destroys them, which was, in this case, Assyria.
Yes.
Yeah, because an army would march in and take whatever they want.
Yeah.
So if your army... your big army is turn tail and run. You're going to lose faith, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're going to be looking defeat straight in the face. Good job. All right. So it wasn't as hard as you thought. You did great. And, we're doing this.
A little easier.
We're doing this in little chunks, so it won't be as painful. All right, let's talk a little bit deeper then. Let me get share screen going here. All right, everybody seeing the slides?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Okay. All right, so the charge against Moab is that it burned the bones of Edom's king. But if we look at the original Hebrew, it suggests that the bones of Edom's king were burned for lime. So this suggests the practice of burning human skeleton to obtain lime, which was used for plastering or whitewashing buildings. So both the sacrilege of denying a corpse a proper burial and burning a body for lime were outrageous and abominable in the Lord's eyes. And in this passage, Amos uses a play on words. The king of Edom's corpse is burned and Moab is burned. So the Moabites worshiped a god that they called Chemosh or Chemosh. And the most famous reference to this god is in the Misha Stele, which was discovered in 1868 in the Moab capital of Dibon. And it dates to about 840 BC, and it tells how this idol basically had been angry with his people and let them be subjugated by Israel. But then he showed up again and he assisted King Misha of Moab to throw off Israel's control and return the lands to Moab. And the script in this stele is either Phoenician or Old Hebrew, which are very closely related. And here's a picture of it, and this is actually in the Louvre in Paris now. Mm. Not in very great shape, but you can see the writing on it. And if you're good in Phoenician or Old Hebrew, you'll just be translating very quickly there. The prophesied destruction of Moab, which was killing its kings and princes, began with an invasion of King Sargon of Assyria about 715 to 713 BC. And we also see that referenced in Isaiah 15 and 16. There's also a prophecy about Moab in Jeremiah 48, and this deals with the final destruction that's going to come under King Nebuchadnezzar in 582 BC. And in the Jeremiah passage, he says, and Chemosh will go into exile together with his priests and officials. So, you know, the idol worship is going to be thrown out of Moab as well. So as you learned in lessons 1 and 2, descendants of Lot settled Moab and Ammon, but their animosity to the Israelites caused the Lord to declare the following in Deuteronomy 23:3-6. No Ammonite or Moabite or any of their descendants may enter the assembly of the Lord, not even in the 10th generation, for they did not come to meet you with bread and water on your way when you came out of Egypt, and they hired Balaam, son of Beor, from Pethor in Aram-Naharaim to pronounce a curse on you. However, the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam, but turn the curse into a blessing for you, because the Lord your God loves you. Do not seek a treaty of friendship with them as long as you live. So the Ammonites and the Moabites were barred from the tabernacle and the temple forever. So even King David and kings after him had made valiant efforts to defeat the Moabites, but a few managed to survive the Assyrian and Phoenician or Babylonian conquest, and they intermarried with the Israelites who returned under the decree of Cyrus of Persia. And you ought to remember the most famous person from Moab in the Bible, and that was Ruth, who was King David's great-grandmother, and she's mentioned in that genealogy of Jesus in Matthew 1. But isn't it a measure of God's grace that he did not hold the injunction against a Moabite entering the assembly of God against Ruth's descendants? And aren't we equally blessed by the saving grace of Jesus Christ? Mm-hmm. So the oracle against Judah is different versus the oracles against the Gentile nations. So the Gentile nations were accused of violating the moral laws, but Judah was charged with rejecting God's law. So when Judah and Israel rejected God's law, following idols like their neighbors and ancestors did was an inevitable next step. And we already know that King Solomon had introduced idol worship into the United Kingdom of Israel in 1 Kings 11:4-8, and this is what that says. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. So Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and did not wholly follow the Lord as David his father had done. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, and for Moloch, the abomination of the Ammonites, on the mountain east of Jerusalem. And so he did for all his foreign wives who made offerings and sacrifice to their gods. Subsequent kings of Judah worked to eradicate the idol worship, but it had already infected the kingdom. Uzziah's son Jotham ruled after him, and here's what 2 Chronicles 27:1-2 says. Jotham was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok. And he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, according to all that his father Uzziah had done, except he did not enter the temple of the Lord. But the people still followed corrupt practices. You know, we might ask ourselves why an oracle against Judah is included in Amos when God had called Amos to be a prophet to Israel. Total destruction is about to fall on Israel within 25 years of Amos' writing. So his words about Judah are a warning to Judah to mend its ways. All right, so Amos 2:6 begins a litany of the charges leveled against Israel for its sins. So the first charge is selling someone into slavery for failing to pay a creditor or on a false charge of owing money. The phrase in Amos 2:6, they sell the righteous for silver, can be read as for an account of silver or on account of silver. The rest of Amos 2:6 is somewhat open to interpretation. The needy could have been sold into slavery for failure to pay a paltry debt for which a pair of sandals were given in pledge, or were sold into slavery in exchange for a pair of sandals. Either interpretation shows egregious behavior. The charge in Amos 2:7 of father and son use the same girl or young woman is interesting. The Hebrew word used to describe the girl or woman is not the word for a cultic prostitute. We should note that there's nothing in the Bible which forbade a father and son from having sexual relations with the same unmarried young woman. But bear in mind, as we learn from Deuteronomy 22, if the woman is a virgin, marriage to her is required. Of course, that assumes that the people in question are following God's law, which we already know the Israelites were not. At least one biblical scholar, Shalom Paul, believes that the statement in Amos 2:7b, and so profane my holy name, actually refers to the entire preceding litany of sins. He states that every moral infringement is an act of profaning God's name. So beginning with Amos 2:9-11, God's words to Amos remind Israel of all God has done for them. When they were helpless and unable to defend themselves, he destroyed the Amorites and rescued the Israelites from Egypt. How can Israel, then, treat the poor and helpless in such immoral and unethical ways? While the Israelites collectively might not have felt that God had done something special by letting them wander in the desert for 40 years, consider the following. Doing so helped Israel develop as a nation. The skeptics who listened to 10 of the 12 spies sent by Moses into Canaan and wanted to return to Egypt had all died. The inhabitants of Canaan were further weakened in that 40-year period, thus enabling the conquest of Canaan, and everything occurred according to God's timing. We might ask ourselves why Amos speaks of God raising up Nazarites in the same sentence in verse 2:11a-b as raising up prophets. The Nazarites' voluntary strict ritual behavior exemplifies the will of God and dedication to God, much like that of prophets. When God says in verse 2:11c, is this not true, people of Israel? Can't we all hear the unspoken words, after everything I've done for you, how could you disregard my laws and decrees and profane my name? Making the Nazarites drink wine and squelching the voices of prophets demonstrates that Israel is following its own rules. Amos chapter 2 concludes with God's judgment against Israel. The consequences are laid out for all to see. Here are the results from 2 Kings 15:17. From 2 Kings 15:29. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came and captured Ijon, Abel-Beth-Maacah, Genoa, Kadesh, Hazor, Gilead, and Galilee, all the land of Naphtali, and he carried the people captive to Assyria. So this was Tiglath-Pileser III, and he captured the cities that were parts of the tribes of Naphtali, East Manasseh, and Gad in 733 BC. All right, 2 Kings 17, 1 through 6. Hoshea, the son of Elah, began to reign in Samaria over Israel, and he reigned 9 years. And he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, yet not as the kings of Israel who were before him. Parenthetically, I'm going to say damned by faint praise. Against him came up Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, and Hoshea became his vassal and paid him tribute. But the king of Assyria found treachery in Hoshea, for he had sent messengers to So, king of Egypt, and offered no tribute to the king of Assyria, as he had done year by year. Therefore, the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. Then the king of Assyria invaded all the land and came to Samaria, and for 3 years he besieged it. In the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria captured Samaria, and he carried the Israelites away to Assyria and placed them in Hala and on the Habor, the river of Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes. This was King Shalmaneser V of Assyria, and he took the Israelites into exile in 722 BC. So this slide from the palace of that same king, Tiglath-Pileser III, which was at Nimrod and is now in the British Museum, shows the Israelite captives from the city of Ashtoreth in East Manasseh being taken into captivity. At least they had their clothes on.
Yeah.
And this final slide shows the breadth of the Assyrian conquest circa 640 BC. So Israel fell in 722, and by 640, look at what Assyria has done. All the way from the Persian Gulf through the entire Fertile Crescent, all of part of Turkey, all of Syria, all of Israel, not the Southern Kingdom, although they were paying tribute at this point, and even into Egypt.